Members of the American Library Association, ladies and gentlemen, I hope being awarded the Caldecott Medal excuses me clever speech writing and delivery. I'm going to hide behind that hope and will start by trying to answer the question which is most often asked. How is it that an Englishman comes to write books about American Indians? I have been interested in everything Indian since I can remember. The books of Gray Owl and Ernest Thompson Seton are well known in the United States. Before television days, my mother read the complete works of these two authors to my brother and me. Many other books too, but I loved best Gray Owl and Ernest Thompson Seton because both wrote about Indians and both were true naturalists. The world they wrote about was so different from the crowded island where I lived. And yet, perhaps growing up so far from this country sharpened my need to know more. Over many years, I acquired a considerable library of the better books concerning Native Americans, and I really studied those books. In 1959, after I'd finished 3 years training in industrial design at the Central School of Art and Design in London, I was fortunate to be given a long summer visit to this country. I accompanied Fritjof Schumann, the eminent Swiss writer on comparative religion. He had contacts among Sioux and Crow Indians, and the summer was spent on reservations in South Dakota and Montana. Love of Indians and nature have always been my priorities, but never seemed a combination likely to support a family. For the next 18 years, from 1959 to 1977, I kept it as a serious hobby and put my main energies into industrial design, with the 18 years about equally divided between practicing and teaching the subject. Nearly 2 years ago, the hobby took over completely when I left England to live in the Black Hills as a painter. As a teacher in England, I had long summer vacations, and in recent years I spent 4 summers in the United States. My son Richard came with me on most of those visits. We would bring a small tent, hire a car, and spent the summer with Sioux friends in South Dakota and Crow Indian friends in Montana. During those summers, I've been privileged to take part in ceremonies, to be present at their sacred sundances. I've taken part in building the Sundance Lodge and have helped to pitch teepees. Knowing that I love their ways, my Indian friends have told me much about their folklore and beliefs. They have given me new perspectives, and really all my travels were spiritual journeys. I do not know what is a valid reason for writing a book. The Friendly Wolf came about because I was distressed at how wolves in Alaska were being hunted to extinction by helicopter. No Indian story I had ever read had anything but fine things to tell of wolves. The Indian understands the language of the birds and animals and seeks to learn their wisdom. He knows they were here long before we were, and being older, deserve our respect. We have been subjected to Walt Disney and his many followers. I have a horror of the havoc they have created with literature, art, and the blunting of our attitudes towards nature. Children grow up with the idea that bears are huggable, woodpeckers are destructive, coyotes and tomcats mean, and that whales and dolphins are happiest when being made to clown in a marina. Respect and inspiration are not there at all. Similarly, in The Girl Who Loved Wild Horses, I tried to express and paint what I believed to be the Native American rapport with nature. The Indian does not feel afraid or alone in the forests and prairies. He knows many stories about ancestors who turned into the seven stars of the Big Dipper and others who became the Pleiades. They tell about a girl who married the Morning Star, and of their son who, coming from the sky but living on earth, did many wonderful things. Knowledge of this relationship with the universe gives him confidence. He has no thought to reorganize nature in any other way than the Great Spirit made it. Indeed, it would be sacrilegious to do so. The Girl Who Loved Wild Horses is not a retelling of any one legend, but a synthesis of many. Psychological interpretations should not be read into it. Simply, the girl loves horses, and perhaps she becomes one. If we think about something long enough, maybe we will become like that thing. I believe children will easily understand this. By the time we are grown up, we might think some thought doors have been opened, but perhaps others have been closed. I hope that Native Americans will approve of the book and will feel sympathy for the illustrations. At a recent autographing party in a small South Dakota community, it gave me great joy when an Indian gave me a beautiful feather in a fold of red felt. And there was a sixth grade Sioux boy who, while having breakfast, heard on the radio that I was to be at the Rapid City Library that day. He told his mother he was not going to school, and so it was we met. It gives me a warm feeling when Indians respond to my books. Some will speak no English, and yet the lively discussions amongst themselves which the illustrations provoke tell me they are happy that a white man has admiration for their culture. I now want to thank my friends at Bradbury Press, as well as the printer, Ray Lithographers, who worked to faithfully reproduce the artwork for the book. I am very happy with the result of their work, and we are all truly honored that the book has been awarded the Caldecott Medal. I would also like to thank my several friends at the Macmillan Company of London, who encouraged me for many years and published my earlier books. On behalf of Bradbury Press, and for myself, I would like to thank the Newbury-Caldecott Committee and all members of the American Library Association. Thank you.